Alaskans, we're still dealing with a pandemic. Longer nights and seasonal affective disorder don't make it any easier. We encourage you to take care of both your mental and physical health this winter. Get outside. Enjoy traditional foods. Connect with your community. And keep your body moving. Let's take care of ourselves and each other.
Welcome to Native America Calling. I'm Alyssa Yakyadi London. Tribal leaders, health professionals, and public safety officials are among this year's class of the Native American 40 Under 40. These are people under 40 years of age that are recognized as business and community leaders by the National Center for American Indian Enterprise Development. Each person has a story to tell that exemplifies excellence in business and the best in community leadership. We will hear from just a few of those people coming up on this hour, and we're back right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Megan Kamrick in for Antonia Gonzalez. For more than four decades, nearly all economic activity was halted on what was formerly known as the Bennett Freeze area of the Navajo Nation. As Arizona Public Radio's Ryan Heinches reports, a bill introduced recently in the U.S. House of Representatives aims to assist residents of one of the most economically depressed areas of the reservation.
In 1966, then Indian Affairs Commissioner Robert Bennett suspended nearly all development in much of the western portion of the vast Navajo Nation in northern Arizona. It was meant to resolve a land dispute between the Hopi and Navajo nations, but prevented thousands of residents from even making basic improvements and repairs to their homes. Many there still live without electricity and running water. Almost a decade later, Congress approved the Navajo-Hopi Settlement Act, forcing more than 16,000 people to relocate from their land. The freeze was repealed in 2009 by President Barack Obama, but widespread poverty persists in the area larger than the state of Delaware. The House bill introduced by Arizona Democrat Tom O'Halloran would begin a housing construction and renovation program along with infrastructure improvements and other economic development for the area. It would also allow some families to receive relocation benefits, among other initiatives. Navajo President Jonathan Nez applauded the bill, calling it, quote, a matter of fundamental justice for the Navajo Nation. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff.
Federal officials approved renaming a peak in Colorado after a Cheyenne woman leader who helped maintain good relations between white settlers and Native Americans. Colorado Politics reports the peak in Clear Creek County is now Mestahay Mountain. It was the culmination of a four-year effort to remove the name and comes after Interior Secretary Deb Haaland from Laguna Pueblo ordered the word squaw removed from all federal lands. Mestahay, also known as Owl Woman, was married to William Bent and also helped negotiate trade among groups at Bent's Fort. It's the first name change recommended by Colorado's Geographic Naming Advisory Board. Governor Jared Polis originally said he would reject the recommendation because it was too hard to pronounce, and thus people would continue using the old name for the mountain. That drew backlash from Native American groups. Polis changed his mind and forwarded the recommendation to the U.S. Geological Survey's Board on Geographic Names. In New Mexico, state lawmakers replaced a redistricting map that a tribal coalition spent months working on to find consensus. Source New Mexico reports a Senate committee voted instead to approve an amended plan redrawing New Mexico's Senate's voting districts that was introduced just before the meeting. Senate President Pro Tem Mimi Stewart, a Democrat representing Albuquerque, introduced an amended map that would alter the layout of districts in northwestern New Mexico, where the Navajo Nation and other tribal nations are located. Members of the tribal coalition and elected tribal leaders showed up Sunday to speak against the amended map. They said the changes disrespected tribal autonomy and their hard work. Isaac Dakota Casado is chair of the state's Native American Democratic Caucus.
The 11th hour pass that we see today without consultation of our Native American tribes is not only a travesty, but it's a direct violation of much of the work that has been done, not for just today in the last couple of months, but for decades.
Tribal coalition members spent 8 months meeting among the state's 23 pueblos and tribes to achieve what they called a historic agreement on the maps. They sought to preserve Native American majorities of at least 65% in the legislative districts where they are already the majority, while honoring tribal boundaries and distinct communities within each district. The senators noted the map must still be approved by the full Senate, and more debate and changes could still take place. For National Native News, I'm Megan Kamrick.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
COVID-19 vaccines are approved for kids aged 5 to 11. Vaccines provide kids strong protection against COVID-19 and help keep communities safe. You can schedule their vaccine appointment today. Support by the Johns Hopkins Center for American Indian Health. Support by the National Indian Child Welfare Association. You can stand with NICWA to protect Native children and keep them connected to their family, community, and culture. Information on NICWA and how you can help at NICWA.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling, and I'm Alyssa London. Before we meet our guests for today's show, I want to take a minute to get an update on the Alaska Federation of Natives annual convention that gets underway today. We have with us Tripp Krause, the KNBA news director who's following AFN. Tripp, this is a moment for us. We met about 5 years ago when you interviewed me for the first time, and now I'm interviewing you for the first time, so thank you for being here today.
My pleasure.
So what can we expect out of this year's convention and high level? What is AFN and what happens during it?
I think the high level for most of your listeners is going to be that Alaska Federation of Natives is the largest gathering of Alaska Natives in the state. The AFN membership includes regional corporations, village corporations, tribes, tribal governments, and Native organizations in Alaska. And Alaska Natives come from all over the state to hear updates from state and federal dignitaries, as well as develop and vote on key state and federal policy.
So given that this convention is taking place entirely virtually, is anything going to be different this year? And can they get the same things done during the convention?
I think like last year, because last year was virtual as well, the resolutions process is going to be a little different. Last year, they did the resolutions process after AFN, which happened in October. And this year, because of the postponement, that sort of drives that schedule a little bit further. So it sounds like the resolutions process is going to be finalized closer to January.
And what's your favorite part of AFN?
I think the biggest part is it's almost like an annual reunion. Like you get to see tons of friends that maybe you met last year at AFN and get connected. It's just a really great time to get to come together and talk. And it's also a really great place to listen to a lot of times we don't ever get to hear some of the stories that come out of rural and village Alaska. And some of those stories are really powerful. And so one of the things that I really love about AFN is it's oftentimes moments for those truths to be come out in public. And there's some really powerful moments that happen.
And where can our listeners tune in to get more AFN coverage?
Well, you can listen in to the KNBA web feed if you want to, the web stream at KNBA.org. It'll be there. You can listen in through Native Voice One, but there's also the virtual cast that you can get access to from the AFN website.
Well, thank you, Tripp. I look forward to joining you in the newsroom later on after the show.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you. So that was Tripp Krause, news director at KNBA. And for the rest of the show today, we're touching in with a couple of this year's 40 Under 40 winners who were just honored at the celebration in Arizona over the weekend by the National Center for American Indian Economic Development. And these are people who are leaders in business, politics, social change, and education. And to start us off, we have actually my former coworker, Heather Doran. She's the chief of staff and global director for industry apps and data marketing at Microsoft. Heather is Choctaw. Welcome to Native America Calling, Heather. Nice to talk with you again. Do we have Heather there? Nope, we are going to go to Brian. Brian Tanner is also a friend of mine from Seattle, and he is the Philanthropic Partnerships Director for the Potlatch Fund, and he is Salish and Cree. Welcome to Native America Calling, Brian.
Great. Thanks, Alyssa. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. So, Brian, tell us about Potlatch Fund.
Yeah, so Potlatch Fund, we're a Native-led nonprofit here in Seattle, and we provide a few services. We provide funding for Native artists, language programs, youth programs, and leadership programs throughout the Pacific Northwest. We also do capacity building and just general advocacy for, you know, for our people in the Pacific Northwest.
And tell me about your role at Potlatch Fund and how many years you've been there.
So I actually just had my second year anniversary for Potlatch Fund at the end of October. And so I've been with Potlatch Fund for 2 years. And in my capacity, I'm the Director of Philanthropic Partnerships, which is, we were trying to indigenize our titles, but basically I'm the Development Director. So I'm in charge of bringing in, you know, the funds for the organization and raising all the money for our operations and for our grant making and other arms of Potlatch Fund.
What has led you in your career to this position at Potlatch Fund? What are the things you've done prior to joining the organization?
Yeah, so actually I started my career in federal contracting. So I started fresh out of college. I was working at Kaufman & Associates, which is owned by Joanne Kaufman of the Nez Perce tribe. And it was there that I really got to see the federal procurement process. And, you know, I worked both project side and development side. And, so I got to work on a bunch of different projects from Indian Health Services to Indian Education to economic development to census, you know, just all over the board. It was a great experience. And from there, I then went to my tribal enterprise, S&K Technologies, and I worked in development there for about a little over 10 years. I worked on the development team. I helped bring in some of our biggest contracts that S&K had ever won, including a $4.2 billion contract, full and open contract through the Department of Air Force. And so that was able to bring in a lot of funds through S&K that was able to go back to my tribe and to help with tribal programming. So about after 13 years of working in federal contracting, I wanted to pivot. You know, I was getting kind of tired of the whole, you know, federal procurement process and just how, you know, kind of fickle it is. I wanted to move into philanthropy, and I spent a lot of my free time volunteering for Potlatch Fund and for Social Justice Fund here in Seattle. And the opportunity for, you know, to work at Potlatch Fund came up, you know, through the development of director position. So I applied, and I ended up getting the position, and I've been working here for the last 2 years. So I'm pretty excited to be working in philanthropy. And, you know, getting out of that federal arena.
Yeah, it's been quite the path that's led you to this position. What's your favorite part of being a development director for a nonprofit such as Potlatch Fund?
I think just knowing that the funds that I raise and the work, you know, all the hard work that goes into development, that the end product of what I do benefits in Native communities throughout the Pacific Northwest. And, you know, I've been fortunate enough to sit on a few of our grantee interviews and just hearing the impact that Potlatch Fund has made on some of these organizations and individuals and programs. It just, it just fills my heart. And, when the days are long, you know, I think about some of the stories that I've heard of the impact that we have, and it just really keeps me going.
Can you give us an example of a project that Potlatch Fund has funded that you're really proud of? Not mine.
I was just going to say yours. But yeah, you know, we were a funder of Alyssa's book, the Journey of a Freckled Indian, which is amazing. We were able to do, you know, some programming around that. So I was excited to see that. But I'm thinking one that comes to mind, I think we were doing an interview with James Jamie, who's trying to revitalize the Quileute language, and just hearing his story of how, you know, they're really trying to bring it back from the brink, and how Polish Fund has really helped, you know, helped their administrative ease, and so, you know, so they're able to do the work that they need to do to revitalize their language. And just hearing his story, it just you know, brought a tear to my eye, because it was just so, it was just so impactful to see, you know, the work that they do out at Quileute and trying to keep their culture alive. And so just to be a part of that and a part of that story is just amazing.
So language revitalization, community projects, art projects, and in my case, can you kind of give us more of a breakdown of the various areas that Potlatch Fund funds in Indian Country?
Yeah, we're trying to, with our new fund, it's called the Potlatch Resiliency Fund. We realized that, you know, with COVID, there's just a lot of need in Indian Country. There's a lot of gaps in federal funding. And, you know, at Potlatch, you know, we have a lot of connections throughout the Pacific Northwest, and we wanted to use those connections to really just get funds out to organizations, you know, regardless of, you know, whether they fit within these different silos that Potlatch Fund has. We wanted to really be flexible and really be open to funding different organizations, keeping organizations afloat. And with our new resiliency fund that we put out this year, we were able to get $1 million out to organizations and artists throughout the Pacific Northwest. But we kept it really open. We wanted to see what the need was out in Indian Country, you know, in our service area, and really to see what kind of dreams there are. And that was kind of our, executive director. She really put it out there, the intention that, you know, bring us your dreams. We want to see what, you know, what kind of projects there are out in Indian Country, and just really, you know, putting those funds out there to those people that, you know, that dare to dream, and those organizations that show sustainability and resilience. We really, you know, wanted to keep it open and just see what different projects there are.
So if people want to follow Potlatch Fund and your career, where would they go online?
Absolutely, come to potlatchfund.org. That's, you know, that's where our, you know, all of our information is. If you want to donate, there's a donate link. And if you want to find out about different projects and different grantees, they're all there too. And all of our social media outlets are there as well.
Thank you, Ryan. We're going to talk with you more after the break, especially learn what the Native American 40 Under 40 Award means to you. This is Native America Calling. We'd love to hear from you today. Call in at 1-800-996-2848. We have to take a short break, but we'll be right back. Continued COVID infections, federal COVID relief, and a number of firsts for Native political leaders. Those are among the significant issues and topics from the year 2021. We'll take the hour to get the Native perspective, looking back over the past year, both the highlights and the setbacks. That's on the next Native America Calling.
Ah, Christ spoke neat. In Chuspiotin's sheet, see Chest Muriemistin's huitish. Inchin quaint Luanui, Nechluas and Quelly, yetwa. Chquickle Telsish to Skelly, Such Muriem yet Sachem. Chquiment healthcare.gov, Uqua Chquickle Telsin, 1-800-318-2596. Chol Nacht Smeet, Yets Mamit and Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
You're listening to Native America Calling, and I'm Alyssa London. Every year, NCAIED, National Center of American Indian Enterprise Development, names 40 people under the age of 40 who are making positive changes in their communities and around the world. We're hearing from a couple of those chosen this year. And if you'd like to get in on the conversation, our number is 1-800-996-2848. And now, before the break, we were speaking with Brian Tanner. He is the Director of Philanthropic Partnerships for the Potlatch Fund, and he is Salish and Cree. And Brian, I'd love to learn from you what the 40 Under 40 Award means to you, and also for our listeners, how you would describe it to our general audience that might not be familiar with the award.
Yeah, so, I've been attending the National Center for American Indian Economic Development, RES conference for many years, and I've been to many of the top 40 under 40 celebrations and award ceremonies, including yours, Alyssa. I was at yours as well when you awarded a few years back. And it was just so inspiring to see so many friends and so many colleagues and people that I've worked with get the award. And, obviously I'm very proud of them. But also, it was just inspiring to see them. And this year, I was nominated through a coworker of mine, Rebecca Miles, who's our operations director for Potlatch Fund. And she's also the former chairwoman for the Nez Perce tribe. And so it was an honor to even be nominated and, then to eventually, get the award. I think it's just...
Well, it's very well deserved. You've worked very hard.
Thank you.
And thank you for being at my ceremony. And did you end up going to yours, or can we honor you in a different way?
Actually, I was on the plane ready to go to Phoenix this weekend, but mechanical errors or mechanical failures, I wasn't able to attend this year the ceremony. So I celebrated a little my way with a few friends of mine here in Seattle, and just kind of did my own thing. But I really wish I was down there in Phoenix with all the other awardees, but the creator had different plans for me. So.
Well, hopefully we'll get to celebrate you also at RES this coming year, as there's usually a 40 under 40 reception. So I look forward to that.
Yeah, definitely.
We have a caller. We have Alyssa calling in from Montana, who's listening online. She has a question or a message for Brian.
Hello, can you guys hear me?
Yep.
Okay. So Hesquex. My name is Alyssa Kelly. I'm Brian's cousin. I'm from the Kalispeh tribe here in Montana. And I work in a similar field. I'm the donor engagement manager with the ACLU of Montana. And I just wanted to recognize my cousin Brian for all of the amazing work he's doing in philanthropy and the contributions he's making through the Potlatch Fund. That is just so awesome. And I also just think that the 40 Under 40 is an important opportunity to recognize, the contributions of Indigenous people and also to the greater community at large. And so, I just wanted to call in and show my cousin support and let him know that I love him and I'm proud of him. So good job, Brian.
Oh, Alyssa, that's so heartfelt. I love that. Brian, anything to say to your cousin?
Oh, that's amazing. I'm so proud of Alyssa. She's also, working in philanthropy and doing so much great justice work in Montana through ACLU and Murder and Missing Indigenous Women. And, she's also very up and coming. And, I'm excited to see her career and how that's going to really take off for her.
Yeah, excited for her, too. We'll have to nominate her at some point, if not already, right?
Absolutely.
Also on the line today, we have Stacia Morphine. She's the founder and chief executive officer of the Nez Perce Tourism Association. And Stacia is Nez Perce herself. Welcome to Native America Calling, Stacia.
Imakis Katsiaya for the introduction, Alyssa. That is, thank you very much. Inam Winikwas Kusnim Kasnuat, Soyapa Winikwas Stacia Morphine, Tats Mewi, Tats Kalas, Tats Kalawit. What I said in the Nimi Putin, that's the Nez Perce language, is good morning, and thank you very much, Alyssa, for the intro. My name is One Who Takes Care of Water, also known as Stacia Morphine. I said good morning, good good afternoon and good evening to all of those who are listening to Native America Calling.
Thank you, Stacia. Now, were you able to go to the awards ceremony in person this last weekend?
I was, and it was such a delight being in the midst of, you know, almost 40 others plus previous recipients, you know, who really were at where passion meets their purpose. And that room was just full of light. It was so, so, so powerful to be there.
And what does the 40 Under 40 Award mean to you?
Oh, my goodness. This is just such a great honor. You know, in our cultural values from the Nimitzu, that's the Nez Perce perspective, you know, the more that you generate, whether it's in Centilia Show or elk hides or money, what you do is how you generate that wealth is you don't put it in a bank and see how much money you can get over time and duplicate that product or those prices or that value. What you do is it's based off what you can give back to your community. So back in our day, from our ancestors' point of view, the more that you can give back, you know, like what Brian is doing, you know, probably what Heather is doing. What we're doing is we're being able to gather these resources and we're able to distribute them in a way that's meaningful back into our communities. So that's really what it is to be a 40 Under 40 award. It's not to go on stage and get this very prestigious award, but what it is it's making sure that we're giving back in a good way to our communities. We're uplifting our youth to remind themselves of who they are and where they come from. That's what it is to be a 40 Under 40 recipient.
Very, very well put. Now, do you know your fellow cohort member, Brian? Have you guys worked together or met before?
No, I don't. But a lot of the people that he mentioned, you know, are also Nimitzu Nez Perce women. You know, the Kaufman and Associates, you know, Rebecca Miles, you know, we're just really kind of following into the line of leadership that we're intended to be as Nez Perce women, it sounds like. I haven't met him in person, but I do follow the Potlatch Fund. We were just able to log on. Nez Perce Tourism was on their day of giving, and so we were able to donate some funds to the organization. And we also applied for the Resiliency Fund as well. So hopefully we'll be able to connect one way or another in person sometime soon.
I think that's one of the best parts about Native American 40 Under 40 is all the people that you get to meet and network with. Did you enjoy doing that when you were at the awards ceremony this weekend?
Oh, absolutely. One of my most favorite moments, was being able to see the mostly young women. Some of them were dressed in their regalia. And my sister, Sierra, and I, we went back and forth on, you know, should we go and represent and honor our ancestors in a way that's just very impactful? Should we bring our buckskins and our eagle feathers and our beadwork? And, you know, last minute we decided, shoot, we didn't want anything to happen, you know, on the plane with those items because that material culture of ours is very much alive. But seeing, you know, some of the women in regalia in their basket hats or their coastal hats or whether it was their ribbon skirts or dresses or things. I mean, that was so impactful to see that. And I'm thinking, yes, thank you. I just tapped over my heart because I was so thankful to see that these young women are like, yes, I'm going to go with regalia. I'm going to honor my ancestors in the way that I should. So for me, seeing that was really, really important. And then also just being able to stand in the line and look to my left and look to my right and know that we are okay. We are the future. The future is now. And now is Indigenous, you know, now is Native American. So that was really important and really impactful to be able to experience that. And, of course, to make new networks and meeting new people and just making sure that, you know, we all stay in the contact and share each other's resources. You know, I've added a dozen people to, you know, our grant list and our, you know, resource list to be able to share these resources with them that we all have, right, but just might not have, you know, access to. So making sure that we're all holding each other up and we're all helping each other be successful and continue to succeed.
Thank you. Can you tell us more about what Nez Perce Tourism does, your organization?
Yeah, the mission of Nez Perce Tourism is strengthening our Nimitzu cultural identity, connection to place, and sharing our personal narratives to connect guests to Nimitzu culture and homelands. And so the first part of that is recognizing and strengthening our Nimitzu identity. So when people think of tourism, oftentimes people think of, okay, how many non-tribal people can we get into our communities to generate revenue, right? Whether it's through overnight accommodations, you know, the cultural experience. But really the core pillar of Nez Perce Tourism is strengthening our cultural identity, making sure that our youth know who they are, know where they come from, are able to connect with our homelands, our rivers, you know, here in our homeland, you know, consists of multiple states, you know, Idaho, Washington, Oregon, Montana, Wyoming, you know, parts of Canada, over into California. So how I base kind of our homeland is as far as we have a place name. And I always like to welcome each of my presentations in the Nimiipuu tent because, you know, just recently we were unable to speak our language. We were unable to share our religious ways, to be able to bring out our eagle feathers and be who we are, right? We were not able to be who we are. So anytime that we do these things, I'm able to open up with a language which is already powerful. I'm already communicating with my ancestors and them through me. So being able to connect our youth to these places, these homelands of ours, our rivers, our language, you know, remind them who they come from, who their ancestors are, go through their lineage and their history and see, you know, what prominent leaders that they come from, what bands. And just being able to do that is strengthening their identity, giving them a hope, you know, breaking the generational cycle of trauma, being able to start healing, talking about these processes. So that's one of the biggest parts of Nez Perce tourism. On the external level, what we're doing is we are not only being able to provide a huge workforce, but we're also helping our allies better understand, you know, why we are and where we are where we are, you know, as far as in the midst of revitalizing our language. Why? Well, just recently, it's because the United States government allowed women, Nez Perce, and Native American women to be given the right to vote, right, in 1965. You know, in 1978, American Indians Religious Freedom Act. And so being able to help them understand the very recent political climate that we're in helps them also understand why we need more resources and more support to be able to do these things. So there's lots of great work behind tourism that isn't just under, you know, bringing people to casinos, bringing people on our jet boat trip, bringing people whitewater rafting, but really is allowing them to make their own personal connection to place. And that's the Nimiipuu homeland. It's very powerful where we're at. And so we just want to make sure that we continue to offer these type of trips. You know, we do dinners with the Nez Perce, historical site tours, all kinds of neat and interesting things that you cannot experience anywhere else in the world. You can only experience Nimiipuu in Nimiipuu homeland with Nez Perce tourism. So I did 2 years of market research before I penetrated the industry. And 97% of all of the regional tours, whether it was jet boating into Hell's Canyon, whitewater rafting, downtown ghost tours, I mean, you name it, every single one of those people were sharing the Nimiipuu history, and none of them were Nez Perce. All of them were not tribal. And I sat back and I went on every single one of these trips, and I was hurt. I was very hurt by what was being said about our people and our history. It was very inaccurate. And so that was one of the first things is tourism. For me, it's a responsibility. And it's something that I have been called to do by my ancestors. So that's what's really neat about Nez Perce tourism.
Thank you, Stacia. Brian, have you engaged much through Potlatch Fund with cultural tourism?
Oh, you know, that's a good question. You know, one thing that we're actually known for, especially in Seattle, is we like to bring a lot of our donors and different folks from the Seattle area that want to experience Native culture. We bring them to the canoe journey, and the canoe journey often comes through, you know, our waterways here in the Seattle area. So, you know, just to show, because we also, through Potlatch Fund, fund a lot of the canoe families, and so we want to bring some of those donors that want to know more about Indigenous people, you know, through our lens, through an authentic lens. And, you know, we'll bus them up here in Seattle and bring them to one of the landing ceremonies and, you know, just really show them, you know, what the Coast Salish culture is and how their funds really go towards, you know, that cultural revitalization. And so, that's something that I think that our donors really appreciate, and I can't wait for Canoe Journey to come back again, you know, post-COVID. So.
Me too. I love Canoe Journey, at least the one that I've been to in Juneau, or outside of Juneau. The part that she was talking about, that cultural tourism is also something that is important internally to tribal communities, meaning it's an opportunity for kids to reconnect with who they are and where they come from. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, through Potlatch Fund, we fund a lot of actually two of the five that of our grant funds go towards for Native youth, and a lot, and some of them are for summer camps. And so we like to fund those organizations that, you know, that bring youth out into the environment, into culture. And so we often support a lot of those summer camps and those language camps, you know, throughout the Pacific Northwest, and really helping connect people to identity. So
thank you. Stacia, we have about a minute and a half before break, but I wanted to ask you, how did you get started with your business and where did the idea come from? And if we have to cut you off before to go to break and then finish your thought after the break, we'll do that. But we can get started with that big question. That'd be great.
Oh, absolutely. And thank you so much for asking. So Nespresso Tourism and my connection with this role is actually a divine instruction that was given to me by my ancestors. Before I started Nespresso Tourism and started the 2 years of market research, I worked in advertising and marketing for a firm here in Lewiston, Idaho, and did very well, you know, making connections with people and developing those relationships and being able to allow these businesses to become more successful based on their marketing plans. And so I was thinking, I think I can potentially start my own business one day. And although, you know, financially we were fine, we were doing great, I was very happy, I felt like there was something more that I needed to do. And so I took my daughter, she's 4 now, her name is Kemas Nimlatis, Kemas Lily, and I took her to one of our sacred family sites to pray, and I packed her up on my Kilti backpack, and I started singing one of our traditional Nimiipuu songs, and about the second, almost third verse, a old Nez Perce man came to me, and just like we're talking today, it was, you know, we're here. It seems like we're in person where our spirits are connected. And he told me that I would start a company in cultural preservation. And so I'm thinking, oh my goodness, I am not the most cultural person that I know. I don't think, you know, this is the right fit. But when your ancestors, when your elders tell you to do something, you do it. You don't ask questions. You don't sleep on it. You know, first thing that next morning when I got off that mountain, I went into the Small Business Development Center. And although I have a degree in hospitality management and business administration, I wanted to make sure that I did this well. And so
you felt called by something greater than yourself. And we want to hear more about that after the break. We have to take a short break, but we'll be right back. This is Native America Calling.
Mesa Lands Community College can help you lead the way in your chosen field. At Mesa Lands, where 1 in 3 students is Native American, you get hands-on opportunities working one-on-one with instructors in wind energy, where students go up the turbine in their first semester, silversmithing with access to the largest foundry in the Southwest, and blacksmithing in the cowboy arts. Mesa Lands has a national top 10 rodeo team, too. Info and applications at mesalands.edu. Mesa Lands Community College supports this program.
This is Native America Calling, and I'm your host, Alyssa London. And we're hearing from recipients of the Native American 40 Under 40 Awards today. These are people chosen for showing outstanding leadership and for making positive changes in the world. You can get in on the discussion if you like. Our number is 1-800-996-2848. Now, on the line with me today, I have Brian Tanner, the Director of Philanthropic Partnerships for the Potlatch Fund. He is Salish and Cree. And we also have Stacia Morphine. She's the founder and chief executive officer of Nez Perce Tourism, and she is from the Nez Perce tribe. Stacia, before the break, you were sharing with us how you felt the conviction to actually start your company, and you were sharing that you felt called by your ancestors to walk down this path. Can you share with us more about that story?
Yeah, I'll just go ahead and wrap up kind of where I left off. So this divine purpose that was given through me, you know, through prayer, through supplication, through direct language, was that I would start a cultural preservation business. And, you know, not believing and thinking that I was the most cultural person, it was really hard for me just to be very transparent, to be able to put this into perspective. And like I was saying, you know, when your ancestors or your elders ask you to do something, they're not asking, they're telling. So what you do is you do it immediately. And so I've been very strategic in being able to start this tourism business. But just to be very honest again, is it's very scary to one, ask for help, right? To say, hey, I need help with this directive I've been given. You know, that's the most hardest thing for anybody to do in this world is those very three simple words is I need help. And but that's exactly what I did as I went into the SBA, the Small Business Development Center here in Lewiston, and I asked for help. And then we started going with the whole process of the SWOT analysis with the, you know, the model canvas and making sure that my needs assessment was done. The most important thing, I think, with Nest First Tourism and starting it out was the internal needs assessment. And that was, you know, reaching out to your community and asking, you know, what is, you know, sacred? What is secret? What is commonly known and what is widely shared? And those secret and sacred places, what we do is we stay away from those as far as introducing our non-tribal guests to these things. Now, when it comes to our own youth with that cultural identity that I was talking about earlier, that's exactly what we do. We make sure that we take them to these powerful places so they can understand. And if and when they're ready, you know, they'll be able to receive and respect their destiny in life, in which I think we're all walking right now. Being in this place that we're on with Native America Calling, that's exactly what we're doing is we've asked for our strengths and our identity, and this is where God has taken us. So I'm really thankful for that. One of the other great things that we've done is we all know that we are in the midst of a pandemic. So we opened up our doors in 2008, had our grand opening March of 2019. And then that following year was a non-existent lack of travel. Nothing was happening, right? No tourism was established. So what we did is we decided to pivot, and we opened up Nez Perce Traditions Gift Shop, an online and a brick-and-mortar store. So we were still able to, like Brian, you know, able to support our local, our tribal artists in a way that we were able to buy items in large bulk and sell retail to help keep these families afloat during this very hard time. And then it became our 2 years of being in business. And so we started our federal contracting, which we got, you know, some of the Native Act funds, which I encourage you all to look up and try to apply for those as well. And the Native Act funds was something that was passed by Congress this last year. And so a lot of the federal agencies, whether it's the Forest Service or Park Service, are able to apply for these funds and are looking for Native American contractors to help them with very specific projects. And so I encourage you to look that up as well. But we're not stagnant. You know, Nest First Tourism is here to stay. We made it through a pandemic when a lot of tourism companies who've been in business for, you know, 150, you know, 10 years, closed their doors, and they closed their doors for good. We still remain. And so I know that this is a directive that will remain constant. And I know that my family, my future generations within Nimi Pu Nation will also have a place to work, to occupy and to live through the funds of tourism.
I admire the resilience of your business and also just of you personally. So given that in business there are always setbacks, what advice do you have for aspiring entrepreneurs when it comes to coping with setbacks, global pandemic or otherwise?
Yeah, I just ask that you continue to pray and to be strategic in every move that you make. So whenever we, for example, you know, start a new relationship or we start a new tour, you know, this is something that we don't do, you know, based off the financial assessment of it. Yeah, that's a part of it. But what we do is we make sure that we're covered spiritually and that the decisions that we're making aren't just for us, that they are for future generations. You know, I look back at our forefathers and our foremothers, our matriarchs, and I'm so proud of all of us here listening on the phone right now, too, because we are their answered prayers. You know, this is what they've prayed for people to be connected, for people to be able to share the culture in a place of healing, you know, and from a place of a respected voice. You know, I want to make sure that when I come to these calls that I am in such a great place to be able to share the spirit and this light with you. But that's my biggest thing is to be able to make sure that you're prayed up, make sure that you're ready to move forward and that you also know that there will be setbacks. But you have to understand that, and excuse my language, this is nothing. What we're experiencing today is nothing compared to what our ancestors experienced. So I always think that even on my hardest days, when I have that hardest decision, I have a specific picture that I look at, and it's of Nimi Pu women with their Lee Scouts, their basket hats on their mamans, their horses, their Appaloosas. And the women are the ones that are leading that way. And the men, the warriors, are in the back. And so to see this picture and to understand some of the heartfelt atrocities that they have faced, I know that what I'm facing today is nothing near what they've faced. So that's what gives me my strength.
That perspective is very important. Thank you for sharing that. Brian, the goal of the Pollage Fund is to encourage Native endeavors. Other than funding, what do Native businesses, in your opinion, need to succeed, businesses like Stacia's?
Yeah, no, I really liked what Stacia said about really looking back, you know, being spiritually well and yeah, just realizing that, you know, our people have for thousands of years been very resilient and, you know, and we've been through a lot. And so we really had to draw back on that spiritual strength to, you know, to really help us, especially in times like this, like COVID, where, you know, all industries are just kind of flipped upside down right now. And, but also, you know, I think it's an opportunity that something that Pollage Fund has identified is, you know, it's really that opportunity for change. And we want to inspire that change in philanthropy, in giving, and how we receive funds. And so I think with, you know, with COVID and just, you know, a lot of the racial uprisings from Black Lives Matter, it's really put a lot of focus back on Black and Indigenous people and, you know, really bringing us back to the table and giving us a voice for that change. And so, you know, something that Pollage Fund, we really want to do that. We were meeting with folks, you know, throughout our areas. Is really trying to change the way we look at philanthropy and how we give out funds, but also how we receive funds as well. And having the power to tell someone, no, I don't want your money because we don't align. Our values just don't align. And, you know, we don't want to accept that money that, you know, will eventually go out into community. And so,
in other words, thinking about funding as, so it sounds like you're saying funding is a matter of alignment of values and thinking about it more than just the funding itself, that even with Native businesses, it's about defining whether what they are actually focusing their time and energy, their mission is just as important as the ask for how much funding they need to have to make an impact in the community. In other words, it goes way beyond just funding.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, just being value aligned and, you know, going back to what Stacia said, just putting faith in spirituality and the creator and knowing that, you know, that we're accepting these funds in a good way and putting them back out into the community in a good way.
Thank you, Brian. Stacia, how do you inspire that commitment to your community in others? And I mean, you're a 40 under 40 awardee. I mean, so much of that is now taking the responsibility of being a mentor. So how do you inspire others, whether it's in business or in cultural values? Tell us about that.
Oh, absolutely. I'm going to hit you guys with some new information here that we haven't talked about yet, but just real quick. So not even, you know, 5-6 years ago, I was actually in federal prison for just not living a good path. And I, you know, was involved in drugs and alcoholism and just not really knowing who I was as a Nimiipuʻiaʻi, as an Esperus woman. And to fast forward, you know, finding exactly who I was and looking at that destiny in my life, you know, I went from being in federal prison to being a federal contract holder with an AA certified business. So just looking at believing in yourself and having that courage to change, I mean, that is really powerful. And I'm very transparent, you know, when I speak about, you know, where I've been, because I want people to know that if you deposit a little bit of hope into one person, if you believe in that one person, if you give time and energy into that one person, it does make a difference. And I want people to know that no matter who you are, no matter where you've been, that you have a purpose, you have a destiny in your life. And if I can help you and guide you along that way, through my own personal narratives, my own personal experience, I will take that time to do it. I will put my things aside and I will make time for you. And I encourage other people to also do the same thing, you know, in your personal life, in your professional life. You know, when we have our team meetings, we talk about what our personal goals are. You know, are we interested in going back to school? Are we interested in learning, getting more involved in our language? Do we need new regalia? What is it that we need to help ourselves be more successful to make that connection? So that's what we do at Nesperus Tourism. And with my own personal walk in life is I try to make sure that I help people understand who they are and remind them of where they come from and believing in them, you know, as another woman who's been through a lot and has experienced a lot in this lifetime.
Stage shift from prison to a role model in your community. How does a person make that leap? That's just so inspiring. It goes back to what you were saying when you were giving us perspective. There's no excuses. I mean, what the hardest days that we're going through are nothing compared to our ancestors. But even with your own life, anything that you're experiencing now, geez, when you compare it to being in prison, you must be like proud of yourself, how far you've come. So again, how does a person take that leap?
I feel so great. I feel so good to be woke. You know, that word is just going around so freely, but when you actually experience it into the magnitude that I have, it's a game changer for many people, for a whole nation of people, not just myself and my community. You know, when I step forward and I talk, I'm sometimes representing a whole nation of people. This is some people's only time that they'll ever interact with an Indigenous person, a Native American person. So I have to make sure that I'm doing it in a way that, like I said, is respectful, is from a place of full healing. And that's where I think a lot of our people are missing is we have lots of knowledge. We have lots of, everybody is great. You know, there's so many Native people that are great, you know, educators, scientists, lawyers, doctors, teachers, right? But if you aren't that from a place of healing, you're not making the impact that you need. So we have to make sure that our people are fully healed and that they have the resources and that somebody believes in them. You know, a lot of our times our young people, you know, come from families of so much, conspiracy of silence is something that's huge with our Native people. So to be able to start talking about some of these things that we've experienced as young people that, you know, intertwined in our DNA and our genetics. And we have to make sure that we continue to talk about, you know, some of the things that we've experienced or have gone through. Because as women, you know, when I had my daughter, I made sure that my days were aligned with the greatness of those days. I didn't want anything to come in between her spirit when she was born. I wanted to make sure that she came out very pure, you know, cleansed with a good heart because her mother carried her with a good heart. So I want to make sure that anything that we do moving forward is breaking the cycles of traumas from our past.
And do you still reach out to at-risk populations with your story? It's, again, very inspiring.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. We just actually did a couple of weeks ago a program with, it's called the Idaho Youth Academy. And it's a lot of them are where youth, both men and women, you know, young boys and girls, I think they have to be below 18, are starting to get into trouble, starting to get, either addicted or to get little misdemeanors, you know, racked up. And what we do is with the Chief Joseph Foundation is we bring them into, spend time with the Appaloosa horse. It's about a 3-day experience, and we bring in our culture, our language, our songs, our drums, our horses, and it's a really healing experience for them. It gives them, just a sense of peace, because those horses, those mamans, those Appaloosa horses, they really do a way of kind of taking those harsh feelings, those harsh experiences, and they hold them, and they're able to ride as one, you know, and being able to learn the cultural values of love, respect, you know, reciprocity that we have as Native people. Some of them are Native, some of them are Mexican, some of them are white, you know, Black. We have a lot of these kids, and that's just one example just from last week. And we make sure that we, Nest for Tourism and myself, that we do everything we can to help help foster and develop these young people to make sure that they know who they are and that they don't have to choose that life, that they can make different choices and grow out of those.
Thank you, Stacia. Thank you for sharing some of your story and also the amazing values of your business. Brian, something that I really like about you as a friend and colleague who I've seen around Indian country over the years is that you always are raising others up and pointing out their accomplishments. You're so positive. What's one of the ways that you're going to use your new award, 40 Under 40 Award, to raise up others in Indian country?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, as Indian people, we're very humble, and so we, so I like to brag about my friends and really pump my friends up and really get their accomplishments out there. But I think with 40 Under 40, it's kind of put a spotlight on a lot of us, and now we have that responsibility of mentoring folks like Stacia had mentioned and you had mentioned. We have that responsibility now to help mentor folks. And, I'm seeing some of those requests come in, and I definitely want to help mentor people and, that next generation of folks.
Thank you, Brian, and thank you, Stacia. If you'd like to learn more about the 40 Under 40 Awards, you can go to the National Center for American Indian Economic Development website at ncaied.org. The awards are given out each year, and you can see the names of the past winners as well. And you can listen to our conversations with past winners by going to NativeAmericaCalling.com and searching for 40 Under 40. I want to thank my guests today, Brian Tanner and Stacia Morfin. I'm back again tomorrow for another live show. We're taking a look back at 2021 from a Native viewpoint. Tune in tomorrow. I'm Melissa London, and this is Native America Calling.
With Christmas supplies and gifts in short supply, rest assured Prairie Edge and the Sioux Trading Post have you covered. Botanicals, craft supplies, beads, books, and music. We may not have it all, but we sure have a bunch at PrairieEdge.com who support this show. Wopila.
Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at RamonaFarms.com.
Support by Roswell Park, who know tribal communities face persistent challenges in health equity, such as cancer and higher death rates. The Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center is dedicated to advancing cancer research that will lead to translatable science, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous populations worldwide. Are you at high risk for cancer? A no-charge online assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.